If you are sitting at home next to your radio, you're hearing the music faster than you are if you're in the hall.
Listening for the secret. Searching for the sound. This is The Sound Podcast with Ira Haberman. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. Now, here's Ira.
The Sound Podcast is part of the OSIRIS Network. OSIRIS connects you with podcasts, videos, and live experiences about the artists and topics you love. Visit OSIRISPod.com to check out our shows. In fact, you should check out No Simple Road or Inside Out with Turner and Seth. Both are great shows. OSIRIS works in partnership with Jambase, which connects music fans with the music they love and empowers them to go see live music. For more, check them out at jambase.com. The show starts now.
Times in the army, bad times in the war. Don't love you, won't see you just one time more. It is what it is, there's nothing you can do. It's coming for me and it's coming for you. I'm gonna tell you how I'm feeling. Before there comes the past, I won't miss my last chance. But my phone rings more, bristles on my neck. Sleep in this world and passed on to the next. I walked out into the open under a clear blue sky. All the words I never said fall from my eyes. It is what it is. There's nothing you can do. It's coming. It's coming for you. I'm gonna tell you how I'm feeling, even though it's come to pass. I won't miss my last
to Last Chance from Trout Steak Revival's 2017 album, Spirit to the Sea. When you first hear Trout Steak Revival, you'll quickly fall in love with their terrific songwriting and beautiful vocal arrangements, to say nothing of their fantastic playing. They are, for all intents and purposes, a Colorado bluegrass band, but that classic sound doesn't do them justice. Trout Steak Revival are a band bigger than any specific genre, blending folk, Americana, and yes, bluegrass, mostly, of course, due to their configuration without a drummer, and of course, the instruments they do, in fact, play. We've been on their trail for a while, since our friend Chris Pandolfi of the infamous String Dusters produced their last two records. Aside from their sound, the other thing that hits you is their name. Oh no, not another acoustic band named for fish. Actually, when we sat down with Steve Foltz of Trout Steak Revival, I asked why there are so many bluegrass bands with fishy names. And that's where our conversation started.
I'm not sure why. I can't really speak to other bands. To tell you the honest truth, like when we named our band, I don't think that we knew a whole lot about like the bluegrass world and the community, the greater community in which we lived. I think for us, the name Trout Steak, it came about because of a catchphrase from a backpacking trip up in Eagle County, Colorado. And we had fished there a few times before, and at this lake, which you have to backpack to it. So the previous times that we went up there, we caught quite a few fish, and we the preface to the story is that these days I just like catch and release, and that is kind of the status quo for like a Colorado fisher person, I would say for sure. And definitely like there's certain rivers that you can't, you know, keep the fish, but in this lake you can keep them if you want. There's a bag limit and all that, but we ended up just going up there, and then the catchphrase that we kept saying when we were up at this lake was, go get me a trout steak. And it was just silly. We talk in a lot of different silly voices in the band and stuff. And these were the early days, you know. And prior to that point, we were the South Platte River Ramblers, which was just a de facto kind of name that was associated with the South Platte River. Will, my bandmate, he lived in the South Platte River in Conifer, Colorado. So that was the name for the first, like, 6 months. And so we knew that we wanted to change the name and get something more official. We had a show the upcoming week. And by the way, it rained for like 3 days when we were up there at the lake. And we didn't catch any fish. But we did bring this rented mandolin that I had strapped up outside of my backpack. I had just started playing mando. So we sat in our tents, we drank whiskey, we played mando and sang songs. And when someone would go out to get a fish, we'd go like, hey, go get me a trout steak. And, you know, if someone was fishing across the lake, it was like, hey, bring me a trout steak. And so we walked out of the mountains that weekend and we decided to name ourselves Trout Steak Revival. We tacked on in the end of it. So you know, come to find out, there were a lot of other successful bands, Leftover Salmon, Elephant Revival, all kinds of bands that they had like similar themes to their name, but I really didn't know that at the time.
Your big break came at the Telluride Bluegrass Festival band competition in 2014, where you were named, the best band.
We won the band contest.
Yeah, we won the band contest there. Which is huge, right? I mean, that's where you sort of made your mark and where people began to know more about the band and about your music and the stuff that you were doing, right?
Yeah. We had been going to the Telluride Bluegrass Festival for quite a few years prior to that point for fun. And to tell you the truth, I've always said that, you know, I was a fan first before I was in a band. I was a huge music fan, and I'll be a fan till the end. And I still go to shows all the time, and I really enjoy them just as much or more than now that I'm in a band. And we used to go to the Telluride Bluegrass Festival. To tell you the truth, the first EP we had, we brought it there. I think it was around 2008, and we made this stencil out of this laser cutter that I made in architecture school where I was going at the time. We had this stencil that we were using to spray paint our name onto these CDs that we brought. We gave a bunch of copies away. Only one got permanently stuck in someone's car CD player. And they weren't all that angry about it, actually. It was kind of cool. but this band contest happened several times over the years. It starts in Elk Park, which is a side stage. It's actually like a free stage in Telluride downtown. And that's the first round. And the final round is the next day on the main stage on Saturday morning in the festival grounds. So we kind of saw how it happened. We tried it first time in 2011, and we did not make the finals. But we made a lot of good friends, and that was kind of like the whole advantage to it that we started to see, is that if you get involved, and then you start to build community around your music. And we became good friends with some musical pals that we're still friends with, actually, from 2011. And we tried it again in 2014, and we made the finals, and we ended up winning the thing. And it was, you know, to this day, a highlight of my entire life, you know, for sure. And you nailed it. I mean, the PR and the exposure that you get. I mean, right after that point, we got a manager, and we started a tour the very next year, full time. And I'd be able to hear Wyatt right now. I'm holding him.
It's all good.
It was a huge launching point for us.
Did you, at that point, decide to give up your dreams of architecture and being an architect and make music a full-time thing, or is that still something that you do?
I think that there was never a point that there was a hard line one way or the other about having a side hustle versus like music, or a full-time job with music sprinkled in. And then, you know, at some point there was like a year stretch or so, around 2016 or so, where I didn't do any kind of like 3D modeling, or I didn't go anywhere near the architecture field. And, you know, we've been touring a lot. We do about 100 or 120 shows a year. We have for quite a while. And so, the idea of having like a profession in design is pretty much gone, you know, from my mind right now. And I'm really focused on my first love, which is music. But it's cool to have that in my back pocket.
Right.
And, I would say that like for the working musician these days, especially when you're getting started with touring, it's really wise to be somewhat diversified.
Yeah.
You know, and it just kind of like makes everything more peaceful. If you don't have to put all your eggs in one basket, but you eventually end up doing that one way or the other.
Is everybody in the band at this point sort of not worrying about a side hustle and sort of concentrating, for better or worse, on TSR at this point?
Yeah. At this point, I think like we're all really invested in this project. It's our number one, you know, and we're trying to make it go. And we have meetings at once a week just to talk about like administrative stuff, you know, with our manager. And I think it's everyone's first priority is Trout Steak. And then there's all kinds of things sprinkled in there, but you know, from anywhere from like teaching lessons to doing like landscaping, or you know, being a dad, just all kinds of stuff that we have going on. But Trout Steak's number one for sure with our time.
And you guys are very involved in the community, like you said, teaching music or doing other things within the community, and being representatives of Denver and the bluegrass scene there, and all kinds of really cool things. So that's great that you've sort of turned this into a full-time gig, right?
Totally. Yeah. And I think that one of the things that one of the areas where we've seen the most success come from is just like being involved. And, you know, you touched on the community, the musical community here in Colorado, and it's really powerful, and it's important to stay in touch with everyone, and to play shows and branch out and include other bands or be included. There's just such a great music scene here in Colorado. And, you know, it goes beyond music too. Like you mentioned, we like to volunteer and teach and just stay active.
Let's talk a bit about the band and your music. Spirit to the Sea is your last record, and it expands your sound well beyond Colorado bluegrass, but it still has that down-home communal nature. So even though it's a little more diverse than your past albums, it does have that framework. Do you attribute that to the band's love of the music, or is it Chris Pandolfi who produced the record ensuring that that was still at the core? What made you decide to really stick to the core, even though you expanded out from there?
Well, first and foremost, I think that we will always have a pretty specific sound because of the instruments that we play and the way that we play them, you know? So even if we tried to make just like a folk or Americana record or something, I think it would still sound like Trout Steak. And for better or for worse.
Right.
But I think that a big thing, a big difference between Brighter Every Day and Spirits of the Sea was the choices that were made when we arranged the material. And it really had to do with like just keeping the songs kind of airtight and cutting all the fat off them like we did for Brighter Every Day. And, you know, we had several songs on that record that were like under 3 minutes. And then Spirits of the Sea, we put more songs on the record and we kind of aired out the arrangements a little bit for the recording. And then when we play all that material live, we rearranged pretty much all of it to include like jams or just like segues. And that's been a lot of fun to just have different like layers of just kind of ways of reconstructing the songs for different scenarios. But yeah, I mean, it will always be at its core about songwriting, and it will be about the five of us like arranging all the material and playing it together. So I think it's going to be Trout Steak no matter which way we go, and it'll probably have a fairly familiar sound. It really isn't about bluegrass. We just kind of happen to play those instruments, and we do love that style of music too. So
what I find amazing about this band is that all of you have a voice in the band, at least on stage. I'm curious about even writing. Is it a case where it's a fairly democratic situation where everybody contributes to either writing songs together or bringing songs to the band and you guys hashing it out? What's that process like when there are so many people involved in the band?
Well, it's hard. I mean, it's sort of amazing, and it's a great question. And I think like that it's about figuring out what works for us, and that's taken a long time because earlier on in the life cycle of Trout Steak songwriting, we would approach it mostly as like a single songwriter would bring the song and maybe even like the hook or like the lick, you know, for the song and all the arrangement and everything like kind of dialed in, and maybe even the harmonies, like the notes to sing for the harmonies on the chorus, the harmony vocals. But that's changed. It's kind of like morphed and changed. And it's also like that kind of does work still sometimes. But you know, there's a lot of other songs, that kind of take like, they take on more of a group, creative approach to them. Mm-hmm. And those are some of my favorites. You know, those are the ones that like everyone gets involved and we all have our strengths and weaknesses, but we kind of like team up and, somebody will write a hook for it. Like maybe somebody else will change the chords and like have a chord substitution here or there to mm-hmm. give the, you know, particular parts a lot of color. And, and then we spend a lot of time with arrangement and everything as a group. So I think that like in the end, it does like all the tunes go through the Trout Steak filter. Mm-hmm. And it's hard. I mean, there's a limited amount of time that we have to rehearse and to get together and practice. Maybe, like there's a limited amount of time. There's also a limited amount of energy because when we're out on tour, we do have a day off here and there sometimes, but it's difficult to like summon the patience and the mental like stamina that's required to get up on your day off and like get together as a band and make creative choices and like support each other and be kind and be, you know what I mean? Like
yeah,
all
yeah.
these like skills, you have to really come to the group table with like a certain mindset. And, you don't like, you want to be on your A game because you want to support everyone else's, like creativity. And so, yeah, it's definitely like a team sport for sure.
How much is improv on the stage? I mean, because you don't have a lot of time to rehearse, and because Wyatt's hanging out, because you don't have a lot of time to rehearse, how much of it is improv on the stage when you're doing stuff and performing live?
I mean, the most difficult thing to do as a band is, you know, to start or end a song. So those are always ironed out. The thing I would say the thing that is the most open are the amount of time that we'll spend in like a vamp or a jam, like in the middle of a song. For example, the song "Spirits of the Sea." Mm-hmm. These days, it's in the key of G minor, and it kind of has a four or a two beat, like a bluegrass beat, you know, and mm-hmm. it's pretty fast. But in the middle of that song, these days, live, we didn't do this on the recording, but like in the live version, we go to a B flat and just kind of ride the B flat, and we go to a B flat, E flat change. And basically that just gives it a real like kind of major, transition into like a major key feel. So, right. You know, and it also goes really slow. Rhythmically, we kind of go into like a four on the floor type beat. Mm-hmm. So the overall idea is just like a lot of contrast. So we go to this contrast and we jam, and Travis, that's a banjo part where he just takes it for a lap around the block. And you know, you got plenty of jam bands on your podcast. Like this is not a new thing.
No, totally
at all. But it's really effective. I mean, it's fun for us to do, and you know, at the end of that jam, Travis just gives a little cue, and we know what we're gonna do. We basically just drop into the five chord of that B flat, and then that brings us right back up to the G minor, and we just keep on rocking on Spirit. And that's a thing that's like, it's very planned, but there's like, you know, the length of it and the feel of it, and a lot of different elements are pretty different show to show.
Of course. What, you know, it's interesting that you mentioned jam band. I'm curious about not just jam band, but let's go in even a little bit deeper into specific bluegrass bands. Are there bluegrass bands that you guys look up to and look for advice from? I mean, obviously with Chris working on your records, I would assume that the Dusters are a big influence, but are there other bands that you've been look up to or that have taken you under their wing and have helped you shape the plan moving forward?
Yeah, the thing that we keep finding is that there's just a really strong community of musicians, like from the bottom to the top of the whole ladder, you know. Mm-hmm. And we've really connected with the String Dusters, and Chris is an amazing producer, and man, I still love going to their shows. I just went to one a couple weeks ago, and you know, it's just such a great experience. And yeah, there's all kinds of bluegrass bands that we look up to. I mean, like back in 2015, one of the coolest things that happened sort of early on, once we started touring, was being able to tour with Yonder Mountain. And, it's such a amazing like gift from an established band like Yonder to us little guys, you know, especially at the time we hadn't done much touring at all. And, we were playing to pretty huge audiences, you know, maybe 1,000, capacity theaters, stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, wow, what an experience. And to be able to see their, you know, their lighting designer and their sound engineer and their whole like workflow, the way they sound checked and the way that they, invited us up to sit in with them. You know, almost every show they'd have one of us come up and play. And just an incredibly inclusive group of people, and really organized and really just thoughtful. So it was like, wow, this is what you do. You know, that was the lesson that we took away from it. It was like, that's where we got to go. That's what we that's where the target is.
Well, it sounds like you're well on your way. You know, Spirits of the Sea was released in 2017. Is there a plan to make more music, release live music? What's the plan for you guys, since it's, you know, been some time since we've had new recorded music from you guys?
Well, we have 6 songs recorded and ready to go. We're hitting the studio again in June, and we've got maybe like 6 more that we're going to record. The trick these days seems to be how to release a record. And the way that people are doing it is, it seems like you kind of filter out like singles and just maybe release one a month for quite a while.
Yeah.
Until you drop the entire album. And, you know, it's a changing landscape because, I don't know, I just like releasing an entire record at once with an album release show. Gosh, it feels like people's attention span and appetite for new music is just such that it moves so quickly that you put all this time and love into a record, and it's hard to really like feel the value from it if right. you just drop it all at the same time. But that said, you know, we are gonna release an actual album, but we're just gonna kind of trickle singles out as we go, and. That should begin this summer, and I think the official release of the record won't be until next year, maybe January. And we also started recording all of our live shows about maybe 2 months ago. We started using in-ear monitors, and as a result, we got the console that we needed, and that allows all of our channels to be run through our system into our in-ear monitors,
right.
and accordingly, like, then we get all of the channels filtered through us first so we can record it. So we've been recording in all of our live shows, and we've been putting them on E-Tree mm-hmm. or Archive, maybe. I'm not sure which one, but I think they're on. I have the E-Tree app, and I can definitely find them.
We'll check
so
it out.
That's
yeah.
been cool. Yeah, yeah. Anyways, yeah, so a lot of new stuff should be happening here soon.
Well, you have a tour. There are lots of dates at troutsteak.com/tour. Is there anything coming up that you're most excited about? Any venues or any specific shows that you're most excited about? Or is it really a case of just getting on the road and playing for people is the exciting part?
I do want to. Where do you live?
I'm in Toronto, so you're not coming up here. So
but, definitely not.
No. But talk about. Talk about, you know, you're playing some pretty cool festivals and you're playing some pretty cool venues like the Belly Up in Aspen, which I'm sure you've played before. What is there something that you're looking forward to more than another day?
Oh yeah, I'm really excited about a tour out east that we're doing. It starts in Kansas City at a festival called Bluegrass on the Bottoms, and that's May 17th and 18th, and then we're going to Knoxville and Nashville and Atlanta, and then we're playing a festival out in Georgia the following week, so that should be super cool. And then for all the Colorado listeners, we've got a show at the Belly Up coming up here pretty soon.
Awesome. Continued success. We can't wait to watch the growth of this band, and we are going to check out some live stuff on etree.org or archive.org. And we'll provide links for that stuff as well on our website. So if people want to check out either your music from your Bandcamp page or from Etree or Archive, we'll provide the links. And continued success. And we can't wait to hear more great things from Trout Steak Revival. Thanks for taking the time, man.
Thanks a lot, Ira. Thanks for having me.
I don't often root for bands that I've never seen live, but having chatted with Steve and listened to the Trout Steak Revival albums, this is a band that has a lot of wonderful things to say, and we dig that. So I make no apologies for wishing them all the success they can muster. I suspect that will be quite a bit. For more on Trout Steak Revival, visit troutsteak.com. Before we leave you, have a listen to another wonderful cut off of 2017's Spirit to the Sea. This is technical producer Adam Karsh's favorite, I suspect, for the great vocal performance from Bevan Foley. Here is Side of the Road.
Other side, I'll help you carry yours. You'll help. troubles by the riverside. Leave them safely there, stocked up in violent time. We both know the sting of heartache. A lover's touch grown cold. Affections they may change, but like the leaves growing back.
You've been listening to The Sound Podcast. Technical production by Adam Karsh and Andrea Ruse. Inspired by the music we love. Like us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram and Twitter. The Sound Podcast is part of the Osiris Network. For more, visit OsirisPod.com. Thanks for listening.
Osiris.